Hello and welcome to the South Carolina Lead. You trust the lead to keep you up to date on important state news, and we've been doing that more often as our state faces the COVID-19 virus. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on July 24th, 2020, from James Island. And just so you know, some of the information in this podcast may have changed by the time you've heard it. This podcast cuts through the noise and gives you South Carolina-specific COVID-19 news and stories. This episode features an in-depth look at the politics surrounding the reopening of schools, including Superintendent Molly Spearman on just how different in-person and online learning will look this fall. Senator Tim Scott speaks with Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin about the state of the Phase 4 relief bill. Dr. Linda Bell supports a statewide mask ordinance, and the National Guard is helping overwhelmed hospitals in Horry County. Additionally, we want to hear your stories, so we set up a voicemail box to hear from you all about your daily life in these uncertain times. Leave us a 1 to 3 minute long voicemail with your name and where you're calling from at 803-563-7169. Let us know what's going on in your world. Have you been going out? Have you been staying in? Have you been tested for COVID-19? Tell us about your experiences at 803-563-7169. Now for the latest in South Carolina. Currently, the spread of COVID-19 is ongoing, widespread, and not contained, according to Department of Health and Environmental Control officials. There have been 1,339 deaths, and currently there are 78,298 cases being reported in all 46 counties as of July 24th at 4 p.m. And of those cases, 37,403 have occurred in July alone. And DHEC has begun using the teletracking system, the new federally mandated reporting system, to report hospitalizations. Currently, 1,668 people are hospitalized in the state with COVID-19. 263 people are on ventilators, a record. And our infection rate is currently 21.6%. And DHEC has reported 3 additional cases of multi-system inflammatory syndrome in children, MISC, associated with COVID-19. All 3 children are age 10 or under and from the upstate region. This brings the total number of MISC cases in South Carolina to 5. To give us a recap on where things stand on schools reopening amid the raging coronavirus and politics at play is Russ McKinney to give us this report that also includes some new voices we haven't heard from.
Like some other aspects of the ongoing pandemic, how public schools in South Carolina should open is now fully embroiled in politics. Despite the continuing spread of the coronavirus, President Trump is urging the nation's schools to open this fall and to provide full-time face-to-face instruction. Last week, Republican Governor Henry McMaster, an ardent supporter of the president, adopted the same position and called for state schools to provide in-class instruction for 5 days each week if parents make that choice. McMaster's position on reopening is drawing criticism from Democratic officeholders, teachers groups, and school boards, who maintain that local districts should decide how schools should safely open. This week, McMaster got some powerful Republican support when Vice President Mike Pence came to Columbia to applaud the governor's reopening of the state and his call for in-class instruction.
On behalf of the president and our entire task force, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for leading the way on getting our kids back in the classroom.
McMaster says getting schools fully open is in the best interest of students, and it will also help strengthen the state's economy by allowing more parents to be able to return to work. South Carolina's elected school chief, Molly Spearman, a Republican, isn't in McMaster's corner on the question of opening. She favors a more cautious approach, with decisions being made at the district level, but with her final approval. That's aimed at addressing safety concerns of teachers, school employees, and parents, like Todd Weiss of Columbia. He's the father of 2 children who attend schools in Richland County.
That's what we elect the local school board to do. That's what we elect the local officials to make those decisions, because they are local decisions. It's not a state decision, and it damn sure, excuse my French, isn't a national decision.
Superintendent Spearman told a House subcommittee this week that this school year, students using online learning will have to make some physical trips to their school. Governor McMaster, long an advocate of school choice, roiled the state's education landscape again this week when he announced he plans to designate $32 million of federal coronavirus relief funds to pay for one-time grants for needy students to attend private or religious schools.
We persevere and we continue and we're determined that the children of South Carolina get the best education in the whole country. And we want to, and one way to do that is have the parents make the choice of where they go to school and how they go to school.
McMaster traveled to a private school in Greenville to make his announcement. The county with the state's largest public school district and the superintendent who was critical of the governor's proposed mandate on opening. Most public school advocates are opposed to the governor's move. Kathy Manus, head of the Palmetto State Teachers Association, said the $32 million could be a huge benefit to public schools struggling through the COVID pandemic.
There was so much that we could use in the public schools of South Carolina, and the governor decided to spend that so that students could go to private schools with no accountability who don't even take every student. You know, we've been having to fight vouchers for years, and this is, you know, if you can't get it by having enough votes in the General Assembly, then you go another way to get it, and that's exactly what they've done here.
A state judge has temporarily blocked McMaster's plan. Circuit Judge Edgar Dixon will hear arguments next week on a lawsuit questioning the constitutionality of spending public funds for private education. Orangeburg attorney Skylar Hutto filed the suit. Hutto is the son of Democratic State Senator Brad Hutto.
Thanks, Russ. And as you heard, he mentioned Superintendent Spearman was before a House subcommittee this week updating lawmakers on the factors facing districts on returning to school, how online instruction will differ, developments in getting more families connected to the internet, and the status of the state's COVID-19 truant students. Listen to her tell the subcommittee just how different schooling will be, especially when it comes to attendance.
The experience, the educational experience that we went through from March 16th to the close of the year, I really call emergency learning. You recall, we had to make a decision about attendance. We said attendance all will be counted present because there were some who were able to, through their learning management systems, to have students engage every day. They could take attendance, and certainly there were others that were using pencil paper that could not. That will not be the case when school reopens. Attendance will be taken every day. We've made some tremendous progress over the summer with purchasing. We're involved right now with the bids out on purchasing the licensure for a statewide learning management system that will give all districts the opportunity to take attendance even if students are at home. The expectations will be much higher that students must be engaged every day. So this won't happen again. This will not happen again, and I'm very... And as I am reviewing the plans, Dr. Mathis and his team helping us, that is one of the things that we are looking at. How are you engaging every student? What is your expectation? But districts have already been told, and they agreed, that attendance will be taken every day, contact will be made, and we will be back to a more normal routine of, if you haven't heard from a child, in fact, if you're 3 days in a row absent, you're considered a truant. And we need to send resource officers out to check. So we will be back in that normal procedure then.
Expanding broadband and internet connectivity is a bright spot amid all this change, Spearman said. Hotspots will be dispatched to some families, but other solutions have already helped hundreds of others get connected.
Some families had the line going right in front of their house, the internet access, and they just couldn't afford to hook up. So we clarified that to say that the $20 million can be used, and Senator Alexander and different leadership agreed that that was the intent. So we are now working with families to have them hooked up. One of success story is down in Horry County, where their local telephone cooperative there gave access to over 600 families in less than a week. Just by the school district getting the right information to them, they cross-referenced it. So we've made tremendous progress. I don't have an exact number for you today, but as we are working, we're going to see a tremendous improvement in the accessibility over the next month as we get prepared for school to start.
Internet service providers are working with families and school districts to identify the best way to get folks connected. Even if school districts plan to go all online, Spearman says she still wants teachers to have some face-to-face time with students.
We are very close to announcing some of the first plans to be approved. We have a team, several teams in the department that are reviewing those plans. They are looking at every aspect. Number one, are the students, do they have a safe plan for return? That's our number one question. Have they thought everything out? Have they done the things they need to do to make sure students are safe if they are coming back in any type of face-to-face instruction? Have they set high expectations? And how are they going to measure the academic achievement of the students? And how is attendance going to be taken? As I mentioned before, things will be different. It will not be the same as it was in March. So much greater expectations from the districts. When I met with the superintendents on Thursday, I told them that even if they are doing an all virtual model, they must, in their plan, invite all students to come back for some face-to-face contact with a teacher. Even those families that choose that they want to go virtual all year, I still want the schools to lay eyes on those children at least once and have a conversation with them for that group. Then you hear of other districts who are saying, well, we're going to, because of the high spread, we're going to go virtual now. To that group, I said very plainly, you must include face-to-face with that model, at least, and call it a hybrid, where children come in at least one day a week.
So there's a lot to digest here, and we'll soon start seeing plans approved by the Department of Education. So far, small summer school classes have been meeting with about 10,000 students expected, which Spearman says will serve as a good test run for districts. But you also may be wondering, what happens if students or teachers contract COVID-19 during the school year? Spearman says that wouldn't necessarily cause a whole school to be shut down or quarantined. Here's what she said.
That does not necessarily mean if one teacher in a school becomes infected or one child, that does not mean that the whole school has to close down. And possibly not even the whole class. Or if one child on a bus, it does not mean the whole bus has been infected. We are going to have very strict protocols on how buses are loaded. And we already have given guidance to the districts on what if a child in seat five becomes infected. It depends a lot on how the child has interacted. But if they've gone to their little seat and sat down with their mask on, the whole bus would not have to be quarantined. There would just be those that were immediately close to them. But that kind of direction is in the Accelerate Ed report.
I know that was a long section, but our number one question being asked these days is what's going to happen with schools? But that's why I wanted you to hear from Superintendent Spearman, because she's the one calling the shots with this about the school reopenings, not other big politicians or other folks who keep talking about this, but Spearman and the Department of Education is along with the school districts making the decisions on what school's going to look like this fall. Unlike national data, the number of South Carolinians claiming unemployment benefits is back on the decline. For the week ending July 18th, 14,346 South Carolinians made initial claims. Now that's a decrease of nearly 5,000 from the week prior, according to the State Department of Employment and Workforce. While a return to the downward trend is encouraging, some 201,000 South Carolinians are still claiming benefits. And on July 25th, the additional $600 weekly federal benefits expires, meaning now unemployed folks will only receive state benefits, which averaged $236 a week and are capped at $326. Now this week, the state added six more weeks to its already 10-week extended benefits program. This kicks in for people after exhausting 20 weeks of regular benefits. DOE Executive Director Dan Elzey said if a new federal unemployment benefit is approved by Congress, that it will look different as leaders attempt to tie benefits to previous wages, not a broad set dollar amount that drew criticism since many federal relief helped some unemployed earn substantially more than what they did while working. When a new federal program is approved, Elzey said there will be a lapse as the agency implements federal guidance. And just another number, nationwide, a staggering 30 million people are collecting unemployment. Next up, on Thursday, Senator Tim Scott was live on Instagram with Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin, who is running point for the White House on congressional negotiations dealing with the Phase 4 COVID relief bill. Here's Mnuchin talking about aspects he wants to see in the bill, including unemployment benefits.
We know there are going to be some hardworking Americans who don't have jobs. We had a technical issue last time that we knew about that some people we were paying more not to work than to work. I think most people understand that was a technical problem. So yes, we'll extend this, but with the fix that our proposal is going forward, you get 70% wage replacement. But that's important. And then we also have a lot of tax incentives for businesses to rehire people.
Now, that bill is still very much a work in progress since House Democrats previously passed their $3 trillion HEROES Act. Meanwhile, Republicans are working on their own $1 trillion bill. However, reported infighting among Republicans and the White House over payroll tax cut, unemployment assistance, testing, and other measures has delayed the release of their version. Now, the Democrats' HEROES Act would continue the $600 benefit for unemployed folks until January.
President Trump wants to make sure, again, for the hardest hit areas where people are unemployed, they're not going to run out of money next Friday. So I just left the leader, Mitch McConnell, this morning. Chief Meadows and I met with him. I know we're very interested in the Senate voting on this next week. So if we can't agree with the whole $1 trillion that we're willing to spend with the Democrats, we hope that at least the Democrats will go aboard with a very simple concept of let's make sure we don't let this expire. Let's fix the technical problem and let's get rid of frivolous lawsuits.
As for how the Democrats feel about the current situation and if they would approve extending the benefits when they run out, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer had this to say on Thursday.
This is a package. We cannot piecemeal this. This is, as you see, it has an integrity. It has a oneness about meeting the needs of the American people, defeating the virus as we honor our heroes and put money into the pockets of the American people.
And do you think you can get this done by the end of next week?
Well, depending on what they come up with, what do you think, Mr.
The only
Leader?
Thing I'd say in answer to your question, we're not going to take care of one portion of suffering people and leave everyone else hanging. That's what they may want to do. Take care of this and then they'll go home. No way. This is a comprehensive proposal that addresses the many problems of COVID, and we have to address it as a totality.
Now, do you remember the $670 billion Paycheck Protection Program, which rolled out in March and was boosted in April to give small businesses forgivable loans to help maintain staff and wages at pre-pandemic levels? Well, a study from MIT found that those loans helped add as many as 3.2 million jobs through the first week of June. Now we have a quick health section here. In an exclusive interview Thursday with the Greenville News, state epidemiologist Dr. Linda Bell said a statewide mask order would do more to slow South Carolina's surging COVID-19 outbreak than measures passed by local governments. She said, quote, "We could get where we needed to be much more quickly, obviously, if we were able to do something statewide all at once." That's what Bell said after appearing at a news conference at Michelin North America's headquarters in Greenville. But in an interview with the Greenville News afterwards, Bell said local mask ordinances are only, quote, having a trickling effect, quote, in the state's efforts to bring the coronavirus pandemic under control. Now, Governor Henry McMaster has pushed back against a statewide mask mandate as being unenforceable, despite previous measures that had questionable enforcement activity, such as his work or home order or requiring visitors from certain hotspots to quarantine for 2 weeks. Meanwhile, the city of Charleston has issued several citations to folks not following their mask requirement, this according to the Post and Courier. Moving on, in our Tuesday episode, we brought you the dire warnings from medical leaders in the upstate about how they're about 2 weeks away, if trends hold, from being overwhelmed. On Tuesday, five hospitals in the Grand Strand region reached the point where they needed to call in the South Carolina National Guard for assistance, according to the Post and Courier. This comes as Horry County sees 4,000-plus cases in July alone, and staffing shortages begin to squeeze hospitals even harder. Our case trends continue to increase, infection rates remain more than double above where they should be, and a third of the 1,200-plus deaths have occurred this month alone. And as we go out here, just an interesting little tidbit from methadonecenters.com. they found that South Carolina ranks first in the country for the number of tweets mentioning alcohol during the pandemic. The site analyzed 200,000 tweets that mentioned alcohol consumption and used analysis to find out how states ranked. So, let's pump the brakes here, folks. Now, this is our wind down section where we want to hear from you. Tell us what's going on in your world. Do you still have to go to work? Are you a medical professional on the front lines of the pandemic? What's going on? Let us know. 803-563-7169. Leave us your name, where you're calling from, and a message not longer than 3 minutes because it gets cut off, people. 803-563-7169. And AT, I think we're going to skip voicemails today because I have a special guest with me. My brother Colin, my twin brother Colin, is visiting. And this is not his first time seeing a lead taping in progress. He saw us at Hawk and Dove in December for the impeachment taping. So
I wasn't there, though.
No, you. Well, I mean, you weren't there. No,
you wouldn't be there. Don't worry,
Colin. Welcome back.
It's good to be back.
Great to have you.
This is incredible. Yeah, last time you were down in Charleston, it was your bachelor party.
It was about this time last year. Quite different scenery that we have this time around.
Well, and that was also the state Democratic Party convention was going on. I'm like, I'm going to go ahead and go hang out down in Charleston. Sorry. So, Colin, what brought you down here? What's going on? Tell us how you've been handling COVID-19.
Yeah.
Still been working. So I'm a police detective up in Washington, D.C., and so we've pretty much been on the same schedule, but more, once again, mandatory face coverings, you know, trying to limit as much contact with each other, keep the 6 foot distance rule and everything, but more or less business as usual. But there has been kind of a slow of calls and everything, and
it's convenient.
It hasn't been too bad. But yeah, being a detective, I don't really face too much craziness, like the guys out working the street and the road and everything like that.
Like your wife.
Correct. Like my wife, who's been out there hitting that, but she's been pretty good with it as well.
Are people getting fights on the metro over masks or anything like that? Or is everyone pretty...
Everybody's pretty on board with it. I did notice stopping for gas on the way down here at some more rural spots. Not a lot of mask action going on. But I mean, at the same time, you know, everybody's not on top of each other. So you can kind of keep that social distancing. But yeah, up where I'm from in Maryland, it's pretty, you get judged pretty hard if you don't have a mask on going into a store. Like if you're out and about in the parking lot, people are looking to make sure it's in your hand. But if you're in the store with that one, it is, yeah.
It's the opposite of, that's the opposite of what's happening here. we've gotten callers into our hotline saying that they get mask shamed for wearing them.
Oh, so when I was going to get, I went to get an energy drink at one and I kind of was getting gas and I was looking in to see like what the vibe was in there because I didn't want to be the mask guy. And it's like, oh, you're not from around here, huh? Mm-hmm. But yeah, even before they were mandatory, my liquor store was like, hey, next time you come in, maybe wear a mask, huh? Let's take care of each other. And it was more like a polite guilt trip as opposed to yelling.
We're not mad, we're disappointed.
We're disappointed.
Versus when I went to really quick to Trader Joe's, hadn't been in like a year and a half, brought my own bag because I'm a good person. Yeah, I showed them my bag when I walked in. They didn't say anything, but when I got in there, you would have thought that I brought a gun onto an airplane because they were like, how did you, where did you? And I'm like, whoa, I mean, I know you want to be sanitary and stuff, but this, I mean, I'm not like spitting all over this bag. There was judgment, which I maybe understand. But then when I went to go check out, the guy like didn't even want to touch the groceries.
Did they not ring
came
the bell
out of my
for
trash
you?
Bag.
I have questions.
Yes.
I have questions. Okay. All right. This is where we ask some hard hitting questions.
Where
all right. Gavin and I
just try and spur people to call us.
Yes. This is absolute trolling here. Okay. So this is going to be pretty hard hitting. And I mean, everyone's already talking about it. It's pretty big news. The National Hot Dog Council just came out and said hot dogs are not sandwiches. Where do you fall on this question and why?
Yeah, I would argue that a hot dog is not a sandwich.
The Jackson brothers support the National Hot Dog Council. Yeah.
Let him talk. Let him speak.
So I would argue that that a sandwich is composed of multiple elements. Uh-huh. Such as cheese, sliced deli meats, accoutrement, if you will. Whereas a hot dog is merely, I mean, I guess we would place it in the tube meat category.
There we go. See, oh, cylindrical. It is American tube meat. It is so American
it's
tube
the
meat.
The American tube meat, not to be confused with the Polish kielbasa.
Yeah,
your average.
You know, I feel like in Germany they're not having names, this. Please. Germany and other countries where sausage is, you know, kind
it's
of
king.
Is king.
Big
over there.
Sausage culture. Yeah.
Big sausage culture in Germany.
So AT two against
Gavin,
one
can
here.
You read? Can you read?
Yeah, I have
the definition
the national
of
sausage,
a sandwich here.
It, hot dog and sausage council. They have a whole dedicated website to this.
Can you look up? We had a pretty interesting definition of a sandwich earlier.
Did they not do the hot dog eating contest this year?
They did, but there were no spectators.
It was disgusting.
But you know,
still.
So here's the thing that contradicts the council is that Merriam-Webster actually says that the idea that a hot dog sandwich, definition of a sandwich is two or more slices of bread or a split roll having a filling
Thank
in between.
You. Thank you.
So they
yeah,
say
but
it's
if
a.
You,
but
if you,
I know it's
if you
complete
use a
bunk.
Stupid word enough, they'll put it in the dictionary. Mm-hmm. So we can't trust the.
I think what it came down for me was flat meat, and I know it's a relative
he
term
is
because
hung
we
up
use hamburgers.
On flat meat,
but versus
hamburgers
a cylindrical.
Hamburgers are not flat.
Now,
hamburgers are not flat.
Is a hamburger
flat
a
enough.
Sandwich though?
Smash
hamburger is a sandwich.
Yes.
You know so, where I draw the line is at a burrito. I don't think a burrito is a sandwich, but a hot dog is 100% a sandwich. Yeah,
I mean,
I'm not
if
a
we're
psychopath.
Allowing hot dogs into the sandwich category.
What next? What next?
Is a quesadilla a sandwich then?
No way! No way! Yeah. No!
This is a bread.
There's about to be this is about to be a whole cancel culture conversation right here that I don't want to have right now. What's your other question, AT? That the Jackson brothers can dispel and prove true.
Oh, Colin. I know you guys are twins, and I just wanted to know what it was like growing up in the shadow of a hyper-local celebrity like Gavin.
Well, he didn't have to worry about it at the time.
Feel like you always just had the famous vibe. Like, someday, 3,000 people are going to know who I am.
Almost 6,000 on Twitter.
Let him
high school, you were like a hyper-local celebrity of just like, you knew, everybody knew you and us, and it was just like, hey,
it was a two for one.
It was
a
this party.
Yeah, it was a two for one,
party.
Really. Like we divided and conquered. Colin was
you
an
guys
ROTC.
Were piggybacking your clout.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not enough clout to win senior class president.
Similar, but different.
I can see that still stings.
Very bitter about that because I didn't get to. I lost the primary, and then they counted the primary as the general election, so there was no runoff. I was very bitter about it. Wrote an editorial. But, you know, it worked out because we got to party a lot our senior year, and I didn't need a scandal.
Look at where
I
you are now, you know? Look at where you are now.
Yeah,
so
well, Colin
it all
had a fake
out.
ID, so.
So that
hey.
Yeah.
Not that we encourage that, you know?
I don't think they're children
really
listening.
Is a fake ID.
But these
it's
days with the
subjective.
Mask, I mean, I feel like kids these days,
have
you could probably get away
pop.
With a lot
have
with masks.
Have you seen on, like, TikTok? So Meg's on TikTok, and then on Instagram, like, Barstool Sports will put it up where, like, college kids are, like, getting... like frosting their
old.
Hair gray yeah. and wearing like dad jeans and Nikes and stuff and going and buying beer with a mask on.
We're living in a
adapt
golden age.
And overcome, you know, adapt and overcome.
Geez. But yeah, that's all I had. I think
that's all I got. The other thing I actually have is, it's something that Colin actually brought up is I was upset that Merriam-Webster is adding irregardless
just,
to the
just
dictionary.
That was,
nowhere.
But that
the
was, that's just, they're just
be.
Trolling us on that one. I think that's
they're
always
gonna
kind
do
of,
a whole nother next. And I might die if that happens.
Irregardless, that's not my problem.
Make a whole nother as in just that phrase, a word. Goodness.
That's a whole nother problem. Irregardless of our situation.
Take it out.
Colin, thanks for visiting the pod. Again, this is like two more appearances than Nick, our other brother, our good for nothing brother, Nick, has made. Yeah, a sausage, not, you know, and you can make it into a sandwich because mom used to do this when she sliced it in half and then put it on bread.
Yeah.
To do the credits.
Thanks for listening to the pod, y'all. Show us your appreciation by leaving us a message at 803-563-7169 or leave us a review on iTunes. Also, stay up with the latest on scetv.org and southcarolinapublicradio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. Also, consider becoming an ETV member. Membership starts at just $40, and if you pledge at the $75 level, you get access to PBS Passport and all the great programming your donation helps support. So if you reach the bottom of Netflix and you're watching trashy B-rated movies, you don't even know what you're watching, become a PBS Passport member and get some great, great content there right on your device. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina. I can't use my pizza on a bagel defense here.
No, that does not hold water in this case.
The precedent has been set in BLT versus... let me pull up a BLT versus Hoagie.